Welcome, everyone, to episode 332 of After the Credits. I am one of your co-hosts, Maureen Antunes, joined today, as always, by fellow co-hosts.
Steve Stebbing.
Bill Harris.
And Melissa McDowell.
Welcome, team. Recording like 3 days before Christmas. Three sleeps before Christmas.
Yes.
My niece gave me a hard time because I have one of those countdown little calendar thingies, and I usually just use the date. And she's like, Tia, you're doing this wrong. It's supposed to be a countdown to Christmas. I'm like, oh, good God. Fine. So now I have to remember every day to turn the bloody calendar. And I'm always like, how many days is it now? So I know it's three sleeps to Christmas.
Stressful time of the year.
I haven't bought one present, but I've just like the veteran that I am, I haven't figured out gift cards are king, friends. Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Do you guys like Walmart? Here you go.
Get what you want to get.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I know they're children. I want to see their pretty faces open up gifts and be like, oh, you got me one. What's on my Santa list? How did you know?
Direct line.
Yeah, direct line to Santa.
I know Tim Allen.
Were you so naughty? Well. I think you were naughty. You might not get that thing that was on your list.
Should have been like, have you seen Terrifier 3? He dresses as Santa Claus in that.
Oh,
this movie's gonna fucking haunt me.
It's on Blu-ray too, so people are getting it for Christmas.
Oh my God, why?
Because it is out. It's for your horror fan that just needs zero plot or acting.
Because nothing says Christmas Eve like watching a small child get killed by Art the Clown.
Listen, nothing says Christmas Eve like Seven. it's usually our Christmas watch with the family, but this year I've already seen it, so I'll have to find something else.
I was totally going to ask you if you watched it, because I know you have a yearly rewatch.
We watched it. Well, I watched it because we were without internet for... I literally finished watching some screener, and I'm like, I need to... Oh, it was... I remember. I was watching... Girl with the Needle, and I'm like, okay, I need something fun to lift me up.
So after Seven this. Was your palate cleanser?
No. So I went to go and start the Elton John doc, and it froze like 5 minutes in, and I'm like, fuck. And then I look, and the internet's down. I'm like, oh, it'll come back up. So I went and did something for an hour, came back, and it was still down, and I'm like, geez, what am I going to watch? And then I watched Risky Business because I had the Criterion that was still sitting there and I hadn't watched it. So that was the palate cleanser. And I'm like, wow, the internet's still low. What else am I going to watch? I'm like, it's time for the yearly rewatch.
So when Marina was watching Risky Business, all I get is a text message of a photo of her television of Tom Cruise in his underwear across the TV.
Nice. That's nice.
It looks really good in 4K, guys. That's all I got to say.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I want that one. I like the packaging as well. The packaging is really, really nice for it. I have to point out that this now can be the first yearly watch at Christmas of the holdovers.
Yes. Oh, yeah. There you go.
Christmas.
That's a good idea.
I guess this is also, I think, number two for Violent Night.
My Christmas movie is Eyes Wide Shut.
That's a good one.
Yeah. No Die Hard in this house, friends.
I haven't watched Die Hard in forever. Good, I think it's time. I think
Lethal Weapon.
Oh, that's the Dan title. That's the one he would pick.
Yeah. It's a Christmas movie. It happens at Christmas.
Now that you mentioned it, I don't actually think I have Eyes Wide Shut on Blu-ray. I have to look. I'm going to have to go look. I'm not sure if I own that.
I have the Blu-ray, not the Blu-ray, the original DVD box set of Kubrick, which came with that Full Metal Jacket, The Shining, Clockwork Orange, and then I think the documentary A Life in Pictures. Kubrick, A Life in Pictures, which is actually pretty good too.
So. I remember buying that and it was very expensive.
Yeah. It was like one of those ones at Music World that was behind the counter.
Oh, that's a throwback right there. Music World. It's almost as throwback as the record band. No, Sam the Record Man.
I don't know if I ever shopped at a Sam the Record Man. I have deep, fond memories of A&B Sound,
though. A&B Sound, the Boxing Day deals at A&B Sound were ridiculous.
Yeah.
ridiculous. We'd line up. I think I lined up overnight one night with Dan. It was nuts.
Long live physical media.
No kidding, eh? Okay, we're already like way off track. We just we're 10 minutes in and we haven't even talked about the movie that we're going to open today's show with, which is Maria, the Maria Callas biopic from Pablo Larraín, the man who is the de facto teller of women's stories. I don't know how this happened, but he's very good at it.
Yeah. I have a very deep love for this movie, and I didn't think I would. I was honestly when it comes to Angelina Jolie, I'm not like, I don't know, maybe I have like scars from having to sit through the press screening for By the Sea. but there's just something about Angelina Jolie that I find very unconvincing, but this movie is completely different. And I have to say that at its heart has to come from direction. The relationship with Larraín had with Angelina Jolie in this film to make it work. And it's so gorgeous at all times to look at. Just seeing the pain of the process is very powerful in this film. And it damn near might be my favorite Larraín film.
Wow.
I really, really like this film.
I remember
I wasn't as high on Jackie either, right? Like, so.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we had, Bill and I had this conversation beforehand because Jackie is one of his favorites. One of my favorites is Spencer. But then
I like Spencer a lot too.
I'm a Kristen Stewart apologist, so that goes without saying.
Yeah.
I think has to be up there.
Yeah. The first time I was ever on Marina's podcast, I talked about No.
Yeah.
I had just gotten out of it at VIFF, and I said to Marina, that's going to be my number one film of the year. And it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love No. And I love Jackie. And I don't like Spencer.
I like Spencer a lot. But I also view it as a, to me, it plays kind of like a horror movie at times. Like, it
totally does.
That's what I really like the quasi genre shift that's with it. That's kind of underneath the surface of that whole film. Right from her being weighed at the beginning of the film,
yeah,
is just, yeah, it's almost like an A24 like horror film.
I did enjoy the fact that, you know, throughout the bullshit of the entire film, hey, let's just go get KFC at the end. That's pretty sweet.
I really love I love the ending of that film. Like,
yeah.
I don't know that. I don't know. It's just the pain exhibited in this film that really shines through for me, and the pain of not being able to be herself and keeping all of that hidden and everything. And yeah,
for that long, like for basically her entire career. I mean, I think it's worth mentioning, so this is available, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, on Mubi in Canada,
theatrically
and on Netflix in the States.
And Mubi in Canada on digital.
Yeah, it makes no fucking sense. It's such a
streaming. So it's going to be like
it's up there.
Hitman.
Yeah, okay. I think what I wanted to get to is the fact that I think it's worth mentioning that this covers basically like the last, what, month of her life? Is that what the open title card says? It's a very short period of time that it's actually covering, but you see the flashbacks of her life, which I think is really, really interesting. And that's kind of what I wanted to bring up. I thought that the setup for the movie was really interesting and provided a fascinating look at this woman's life. Cause you see her and you think, although she's callous, she's both like really nice and really kind of rude and entitled. And then you start to see the flashbacks to, you know, how she ended up being, you know, the person that she is, which I thought made for a really interesting observation on a person's life. And yeah, the fact that she basically suffered for her entire life. If it wasn't one thing, it was something else. If it wasn't her family. It was the fact she couldn't see, and then it was the fact she couldn't sing, and then it was the terrible men in her life. Like, it was always just like one kick after another. The fact that she managed to stay alive as long as she did, I think, is absolutely shocking.
I think this is the best Angelina Jolie has been in since her and Zero Cool hacked New York.
Since they hacked the planet?
Hacked the planet.
Is that what you were getting at?
I was getting with that, yeah.
Yeah.
There's a scene in this film, one of the hallucinations about outside the church that might be the best shot scene I've seen this year. It is incredible. I also really like the supporting characters in the film. That the two people who take care of her are also incredible.
Pierre Francisco Fabio, I forget what his last name.
Yeah, he shows up in a lot of movies, and he's always really good. And Alba Rocker, I don't know what her name is the other person. She's great. I think this is one of the better biopics I've seen in a while, and I really despise biopics.
Yeah.
This is like
been documented.
This is like the Canadian film situation with
I actually kind of threw up in my mouth a little bit when I said that, because I just don't like biopics. But this is one of the better ones.
I have to say that Angelina Jolie is like a front runner for this film. This film is going to hit Oscar at least like a ton of bricks, for sure.
You would hope.
And Lorraine, I think, too. Because they really like him in the Academy as well. So
he's very good, and he's very well-spoken, and he tells really interesting stories. Like, I'm not kidding when I kind of say, you know, off the cuff that he's become kind of like the documenter of women's stories. But you look at all the movies, I mean, there's been three, right? Jackie, Spencer, and now this one. But he kind of has become like the de facto person that kind of like documents the lives, the hidden lives of these women that are in the public eye, in a really interesting way, which I think is really fascinating. And the fact that he now has this trilogy of movies is interesting. I don't know.
And technically his last movie was about a woman too. The one about the dancer. I forget what it was called. I'm blanking for some reason.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I forget it. Don't mind me. Go back to your thoughts. Oh shit, I'm gonna have to look it up now. This is gonna drive me nuts.
Yeah, I'm already looking it up.
Yeah, no, I thought it was beautiful. I thought she was great, and the music is lovely. She can really sing. I don't really know what else to say. I didn't know, like, I mean, you figure that singing opera isn't exactly like for everybody. She kind of nails it. She sounds really, really good.
Well, I mean, not all of that is her singing, right? Like,
it's not all of it, together, but a lot of it is
spliced together with Callis herself. And they did stuff to, like, they electronically modified her voice to make her sound more like Maria Callis. I think the only scene where it is 100% Angelina Jolie is the one where it's the last scene where she is not great.
The
reporter kind of calls her out on it. That's the only one that's pure Angelina.
That makes sense.
But to go from no singing background, and like, she claimed to have been tone deaf before she started training for this film, to that is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I think I'm like the dissenting voice on this. Maybe it's not that I didn't like the film or that I didn't see the technical merit of it. I do think the cinematography is really stunning. I think Jolie is really great. The performances are good. But I don't know. I think I'm just I think I'm just kind of over these, you know,
biopics. Yes,
it's not just the biopic thing. It's like it's just story after story of like the tragedy of the privileged class, and I just like there are people who are suffering way worse in the world. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. Sometimes this stuff just hits me a little bit. Like from a class perspective is a bit boring. Like, I'd just like to hear something else, you know?
Yeah, I think that's totally valid and fair. Mm-hmm.
But cinematography stunning, absolutely stunning on this film. It's beautifully shot. I just wish that Pablo Larraín would go back to really interesting material. Like, No is one of the better movies I've seen about politics and about political manipulations.
Yeah.
That was such fascinating storytelling, and I would prefer that class of storytelling to stories about sad, privileged women.
I think the movie Bill was talking about was El Conde, which is
El Conde, the vampire one.
Awesome.
No, that movie's fucking crazy. That's not the one.
That movie's so fucking crazy. So good.
Shit. Now I gotta grab my phone.
Oh my gosh. He's literally walking away, people. Oh no, he's back.
For me, the beginning point was the club. Like,
oh, the club is awesome. Yeah.
That movie is fucking amazing. Cause that was before my festival days. And then my first year of the festival, it'd be my second year. I saw Neruda at the center, and I didn't like Neruda. It's like the film that of his that I don't like.
I think the first I saw of his was, Tony Manero.
Yeah. Tony Manero is really good too.
Okay.
Yeah, it's I've crazy. Never
seen that one.
It's I still haven't crazy. Seen
No. I haven't seen No.
So. Oh, No is incredible. Oh, the film I was talking about is called Emma.
Oh, which I haven't seen.
Yeah. It never got released theatrically. It was movie only, I think.
Oh, it came out after Jackie.
Yeah.
Jackie.
I totally forgot about O'Connor. So.
And Spencer.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Sorry for derailing the podcast.
At this point, it doesn't matter. Come on.
I'm actually not, but let's go.
It's all irrelevant. We're talking about Larraín.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a more relevant tangent than our tangents usually are, Bill.
Exactly.
This is true. The cool thing is this is not the only film we're going to talk about people singing. So, yes.
Oh.
And I have dissenting views, so it's going to be great.
And now I'm like, what the fuck are we going to be talking about? What did I miss? We'll get to
the end. It's got to be the end.
No, I saw that Aviv. Okay. I saw that Aviv.
Oh, I think I know what it is. Okay. We'll get to it.
I'll just say that the times, they are a-changing.
Does anybody get that?
I will say,
I had to look that up because I did not know what the fuck he was talking about when he texted me that. And then it was all clear.
I will say that Melissa hit the nail on the head for me, though. So I'll have words later.
Ooh.
In case anybody else still doesn't get it, I'll just say that the answer is my friends are blowing in the wind.
You're just like you're hitting that nail on the head.
Yeah.
I'm hammering this one home.
Yeah.
I will be talking about a complete unknown later.
Yeah, correct.
Oh, all right. So, Maria. I think, generally speaking,
I'm actually just waiting for Steve to say it's one of the best films of the year.
I don't know.
You did made it five, Steve. Like I think you have to.
It is one of the best films of the year, though, because it is though. It is. There's like films that there are movies that define the year, and when you think of that year. It's all the ones that I've been saying are the best films of the year.
I feel bad for your top 10.
Yeah, I feel bad. It's mental health day in my house all the time until the end of the year.
Oh my God. Do you think we're actually going to be able to do that episode soon? Is everybody feeling confident about that?
Sure. After this week and taking in that and the Brutalist, I feel better about it. Yeah.
I have one
There's
film
still left some to see. I need to see.
I have one film left to see. That's September 5.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I definitely need to see September 5. I haven't seen Complete Unknown. There's a few I haven't seen, so.
Well, hopefully there's a few more that I talk about this episode and Maria talks about that you will want to see, because I know at least one that I'm going to like be pimping in a few minutes. So,
well, the one for sure that I know is going to be in my best of, and like it doesn't feel complete without it, is A Real Pain. Because I feel like that movie is geared to be one of my favorites anyway. Just
so I liked it. It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous about that one. That's like one of my big ones right now.
Who wants to go first?
Well, should we move before we like diverge into our lists? Can we talk about The Brutalist, since I think we've
all yes.
at this point?
Yes. I just watched it last night. I'm not knocking the runtime at all. And in part, it's not a punishing runtime because the quality of the film, like the film is really, really well made. The VistaVision aspect of it is really fucking cool, in my opinion. Like, just I mean, Adrian Brody gives just an all-timer performance for a guy that's already given one in The Pianist like 20 years ago.
And then he's made a bunch of shit. Like,
yeah, he's made a lot of crap,
but particularly like the last few years, his output has been pretty terrible.
Pretty bad. Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Like, I thought he'd lost the juju altogether.
There's one that he did, a gangster one. I think it was called like Clean or something like that. RLJ Entertainment sent it to me. And I was like, this movie is fucking awful. What happened to Adrian Brody? And like, I have a soft spot for like The Jacket and stuff like that. Like yeah. weird experimental things, the chances that he took. But oh man. Yeah, he's done some really, really bad movies. And you don't expect that he has this performance in him still, but holy shit. When she arrives in the movie, Felicity Jones is in fucking incredible in this film.
She's always so good, though.
Just so amazing. There are a few scenes in that movie where I'm like, that's like, that's the Oscar reel right there. Like that scene right there. Guy Pearce, same. Guy Pearce is another heavy contender, I think, in supporting, because just amazing, amazing stuff. And I think it's like is this finally the year where Guy Pearce does get recognized, because he, even in shit movies, he's good.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah, I remember the year Memento came out. I was really about Guy Pearce that year, and I was just like, nobody even saw it. And then all of a sudden, Christopher Nolan became the biggest director in the world.
Oh, did you? So there was, I don't know if you guys saw the story, but Guy Pearce was talking about why he didn't end up in Batman. Like, he actually went to London. He had a meeting scheduled with Nolan. He was going to play, I think it was Commissioner Gordon, I think. He was on the plane and they got a call saying, don't bother coming. They're not going to cast you. Somebody at Warner Brothers had it out for him and said, you're not going to be in any Nolan movies ever. And he still went and still had lunch with Christopher Nolan, but never ended up in any of his movies at Warner Brothers for that reason.
Wow.
Because some producer there didn't like him. Yeah.
That's such garbage.
Yeah, it's pretty
crazy. That's so sad. Guy Pearce is just like another Australian export that just like kills it.
Fantastic.
Every time.
But see, I would disagree with you, Steve. I think the running time is a little bit punishing. I think it's far too long.
3:35.
Probably a good hour. Like, it just feels soul crushing, honestly. Like, it's such a bleak, depressing movie. It just feels soul crushing.
I felt overwhelmed. There's a lot coming at you. And
very quietly too.
Yeah, it's definitely, and it does take its time. I think the movie is a distinct two parts with an intermission in the middle. I think the first part flows pretty fast, and the second part I thought was a lot more punishing. And I thought, wow, this is one of the best films of the year. And then something happens at the end of the film, which I didn't think was earned and just kind of came out of the blue, which I didn't like. People are comparing this to like The Godfather or something like that. I don't think it's like that. I think it's a completely different kind of film. Mm-hmm. I also think that the acting is so great. And then every time Joel Alwyn comes on the screen, he sucks. He is not good.
pretty flat.
Yeah, just completely flat. It also has quite possibly the greatest opening credit scene I've ever seen in my life. The credits going across the screen is the coolest thing I've seen in a film in a very long time. I also love the opening shot of when they get to New York and the Statue of Liberty is upside down. Incredible shot. I think it's really good. I just think I need to watch it four more times.
And I don't have it in me to watch it.
I know, and it's time, 3.5 hours long, and I don't want to watch it four times.
Yeah, it's a hard sell to even watch it one more time.
I don't think it's hard to watch. I don't think there's a lot missing. It's just a lot coming at you. It's just kind of a little bit overwhelming.
I mean, Melissa, go ahead.
I think he set out to create an epic. I think that was his goal. I mean, that's why you're shooting on 70mm film, and that's why it's a 3.5 hour runtime with an intermission. I mean, he set out to create an epic, and I think he has succeeded in that. I think this is a movie that will have longevity. I think there will be people still watching this years from now. I think for me, it was this. The subject matter, the bleakness of the message coming out of this film, I think, is what made this film harder for me. So, yeah, I don't know that it was the runtime, but I do think that it's just really bleak. Like, it's just such a bleak view of art, too. Yeah. It's like, so what are you saying? Like, great art can only come out of great suffering. That the only way to create great art is to put it above everything else in your life. That the only way to make great art is to essentially prostitute yourself to rich assholes who see art as an investment opportunity and a vanity project. Like, it's not that any of those things have not happened. It's just that's the only. That's kind of the only
message of the movie
that is coming through this film. Yeah. And that is really fucking bleak. Is this what we want to see? Is this what art means? Is this one of the pathways for art? It's presented as the only pathway.
Yeah.
And I think that's where this film became really difficult for me, because you're right, like the performances are really brilliant. The cinematography in this is really fantastic. The concept of the building itself, like all of that was just so, like, it's like you really do think this is a real person. Like everybody, I'm sure everybody after they watched this was Googling to find out if this was a real guy and this was a real building and like all of that. So I know I was, because I was like, is Brutalist a true story? Like everybody I'm sure was doing that. Mm-hmm. So there's like a real artistry in being able to tell a story that way that's so seamless, that feels like it really happened, like it must have really happened. But yeah, it's just, this was just such a really bleak and depressing depiction of art and the creative process to me.
It really wears you down. It was tiring to watch.
It's funny because I was reading an article beforehand about Brady Corbett and an interview with him about the making of this film, and a lot of this was in response to the process he went through in making Vox Lux, and that the process of making an American film was basically the themes that are portrayed in The Brutalist, of prostituting yourself for your vision and trying to hang on to some semblance of meaning within it. So this movie is kind of like a diss track like of that whole process as well. So and I think he even vowed to never make an American film ever again through the process. I mean, it was that bad.
Yeah, I mean, this is clearly closer to Childhood of a Leader than it is to Vox Lux.
I've never seen that film, actually. I've seen Vox Lux, but it's good.
I don't know if anybody saw the interview that I think it's Variety did with Sean Baker and Brady Corbett, where they talk about and they both talk about how they'll never make another film in the United States because it's just stupid, and how I think The Brutalist was shot in Hungary,
yeah,
and it cost less than $10 million. how did he make that film for $10 million shooting it on a 70 millimeter film? I don't know, but I guess that's because he shot it in Hungary, but it's like the impossible dream to be able to shoot on film, and it costs like less than $50 million.
Well, it just like, goes to show, it just goes to show how broken the industry is.
Yeah.
Like we've known it's been broken for a long time, but now when you start to get an exodus of talent is hopefully when things will change, but it'll be a long time before there's any actual change. And just before we move on from it, I just wanted to note, because we've all mentioned the cinematography. So Lal Crawley, who shot this, shot Ballast. Do you guys remember Ballast?
Oh, yeah. I own Ballast. I have it on Blu-ray.
That movie kicked my ass.
That movie is amazing.
Were you guys at the 24-hour marathon at the Cinematheque when they played Ballast at like 1 o'clock in the morning?
I don't think I was at that one.
That was awesome.
One thing about the cinematography and the brutalist, I just wanted to bring up that the train accident shot is
very cool.
One of the shots of 2024, in my opinion, like that sequence is just blew my mind.
Yeah. It's super impressive.
Yeah. Wow. This is complete. Wow. Stunned by that one.
Can I just ask you?
Because I'm curious. What would all you guys get that star rating wise? I'm just curious.
I think I gave it a 4.
I'm hanging in the air on it. I think in 4.5.
Okay. Yeah. I gave it 4.5.
Yeah. I gave it a 4.
Okay. Just curious.
No.
I think, I hate star ratings. I would probably go 4, but not based on my personal enjoyment of the movie. Because I'm not sure that that was there. But I do think that it's a technically brilliant film. And I think it's such a huge swing to try and make an epic and then to actually land that. Because I do really think that this is a movie that has staying power and that people will still be talking about years from now.
Yeah.
Francis Ford Coppola must be so mad. So pissed off. Because this feels like Leone's Once Upon a Time in America. This feels like one of those just like films that does land and does make that mark. I think it makes a mark even bigger than a film that was trying to be that like The Irishman. I honestly think this film is better than The Irishman.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
I was really curious about the rating of the film, because in the first 10 minutes of the film, there's a very graphic sex scene.
And I
was like, okay, how are they going to show this in theaters in the United States without it being NC-17? Because there's a very naughty scene.
Yeah.
The film was not rated in the United States until a week ago. It opens
Christmas
in
Day.
In 2 days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that never happens. This stuff's usually done, like, months in advance.
What did the rating land on it?
R.
So it's an R.
Yeah. I don't know what it is in Canada, but I'm guessing it's probably the same, but it's 18A or whatever. But, it's interesting. I guess they thought about the artistic view of it and gave it a decent rating, but you know, don't worry, Kevin Smith can't say fuck 25 times and not get an NC-17, so it's fine.
Yeah, but also, I mean, the only time that that sex becomes an issue on screen is when it's subversive sex. I mean, we saw that with what was the Iris Sachs film that we
Passages
talked about? Passages.
Or I mean, like, man,
not, you know, ridiculously gratuitous, and that should never have even been a discussion, but it was exactly. Because it was,
or Blue Valentine was NC-17 in the US because a character went down on another character and it showed it from behind and that got an NC-17. Okay. Yeah, strange.
Oh. Yeah, this, I mean, like, really, we're talking about a blowjob. I mean,
yeah.
There is a sexual assault scene in this film that I think is far more difficult to watch.
I agree. At that point, I was honestly already so desensitized. It was just like another blow to the gut. I'm like, oh my God, now this? Does it get any worse?
Yeah, that was my final blow. I was already feeling pretty bad, and that kind of mm-hmm. I thought it was weirdly not earned, but that's just me. It felt kind of out of place.
I think there was enough of a metaphor there established already.
That they
needed to go there.
It's like let's just make him a little more evil, even though we've mm-hmm. already shown him to be completely evil throughout the entire film.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not even evil; it's just like capricious, and power. Self-centered, right? Like,
yeah,
mm-hmm. you know, yeah,
yeah.
Great movie. Go see it on Christmas.
Yeah, that's a feel good movie. That keeps on giving.
Yeah, 70mm.
Yeah, that or Nosferatu.
Yeah,
gird your loins for it. Like, it's you're not going to come out at a fun time. So plan to go get drinks after, or something. Do something nice for yourself afterwards.
Yeah, deck your halls and gird your loins.
All right, who wants to go next? Now we can diverge into what we've been watching.
Well, I can do this because I know Bill's been dying. He already alluded to this, so let's get to Carry On. Because Wami Coursera is back in his actual wheelhouse where he has fun, and I know Bill wants to talk about it. Because Netflix wanted to have Die Hard this Christmas, and they missed the mark so fucking huge.
Yeah,
but. I don't know. It's still entertaining on the fact that I like Taron Egerton and I like Jason Bateman, and I especially like evil Marty Bird.
So this is a comedy, right?
Yeah, it feels mostly like it.
Yeah.
There's a really hilariously hokey and stupidly fun action sequence between Daniel Deadwyler, who's having a weird year on Netflix, between this and Piano Lesson, and LMG himself.
Yeah.
Was it Tom Hardy on Timu? But which it feels like, I feel bad for saying that because Upgrade fucking rules. And there was the Karen Kusama movie. Where it's like the cult. Yeah, that movie's okay. I like that movie.
Me too.
But like, fuck Prometheus. just give a jab in on that one. I didn't feel like I was actively wasting my time like I did with like a film like Red One or something like that. So it wasn't terrible. Speaking of terrible, Kraven the Hunter, which is which is the end of the Sony Marvel collaborations, I guess, as we know it, and goes out with such a horrific whimper. Like, what happened to J.C. Chandor? I just don't know. He fell off. Okay, he fell off so hard.
The only thing that matters about this is, does Aaron Taylor Johnson look amazing?
He looks great, but the script just the story and everything is awful.
Who cares?
Russell Crowe wants to try another dumb accent on again and not pull it off. Fred Hatchinger is doing this like end of 2024 creepy brother thing. And he's better than this. Velma, at least he had Velma this year because he's really fun in Velma.
Did Fred Hatchinger like have any like time off this year? Like,
I don't know. He seems so fucking busy, like massively busy.
Movies this year,
at least.
Yeah. He's definitely one of those break. He's one of those breakout faces for sure. People are gonna start to recognize him. But yeah, Velma's fucking great. So especially his anger about not knowing math. Phenomenal. So good. And another thing about Kraven the Hunter, Christopher Abbott is in this one and is like the blandest character and acting I've ever seen out of the guy. I will like die in a mountain for this guy's talent. Like, me too. I love Christopher Abbott so much. And I'm really jacked about Wolfman. Which feels it's very close, isn't it? It's like January, I think.
Yeah, that's like 2 or 3 weeks from now.
That one's out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about that. But this, I can see why, because I think this one sat on the shelf they weren't sure when to release this one. It was supposed to come out in like October, and then it was like August, and then like they just keep moving it a few months at a time. This is exactly why. Just holy shit. I watched the Elton John documentary Never Too Late on Disney Plus, and I thought this was a pretty thoughtful documentary from a fucking legend. Elton John as a performer and as a like an entity is just massive. He's one of those big icons. And I mean, pre Yellow Brick Road, I'm really hazy on a lot of the early Elton John stuff. So it was cool to kind of re-immerse myself in that. And I love a good music doc. So anytime one of those pop up, I'm like, yeah, I'm in.
You don't know the words to Skyline Pigeon? Come on.
No, I don't. I don't, but I'm willing to get into it for sure because like I love a good retrospective, especially now when I'm like such a like an aging music geek. So yeah, I've had that kind
of stuff. There's a bunch of like 70s footage of him in concert. How incredible was Elton John in concert in the 70s?
No kidding. Right? Like playing that club, the Troubadour.
Yes.
200 people. I'm like, how is that footage still alive?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I was blown away by a lot of the stuff that they had and the recordings that they had.
Yeah. Agreed.
RJ Cutler.
Pretty good.
That guy's the documentarian, especially when it comes to, I know that Martha was a little pissy with her, with some of her stuff, but I
don't think. Doc is still really good though. So.
Yeah. I think the guy knows how to cut together, a documentary that feels well filled. Like you feel like you got a good representation of it. You don't feel like you're wanting more. Yeah. I dug this one. I think this is one of the better biopic documentaries.
Just for the record, I've seen Elton John twice, and both times when he played Someone Saved My Life Tonight, I cried. I'd point that out.
Nice.
We saw him on like in the final tour when he was in Vancouver.
Oh, that's awesome.
We went with my dad and my sister and I, and it was amazing.
That's very cool.
It was, yeah. Like even at the age that he is now, when he's not like jumping around on stage anymore,
still super captivating, still
incredibly entertaining and charming. Mm-hmm. And like, I went to that show, like not even realizing how many Elton John songs I know the words to until he started playing. And then it's like, yeah, it's such a huge fabric of our culture, like his songs. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And can I make a request on the show? Can RJ Cutler please make a Cher documentary? Thank you.
Yeah. I think one of those are coming for sure.
It has to, like, I can't wait to pick up her book. Like, it's happening. Yeah. I'm reading the thing. Now I need the doc.
Can it be called Do You Believe?
Oh, no. with like Turning Kenny's. Back Time.
Yeah, yes. Turning Back Time. Thank you. Oh, Turning Back Time is pretty good too. Okay. Sorry.
I saw Joshua Oppenheimer's narrative feature debut, The End.
Why?
I'm so sorry, Steve. I'm so sorry.
God. Yeah. Well, I asked for it from Mongrel, from Bonnie at Mongrel. And I knew pretty quick that I wasn't going to like this movie. You guys are very right on that one.
I haven't seen it, for the record.
I don't think Tilda Swinton has ever been more annoying than she is.
In this film. Well, I don't know. Bill, is she more annoying?
I think I actually might have saw a movie this episode that she was more annoying in, but that's
okay. For later. There you go.
Okay. Is it the Almodovar?
Yes.
Okay. I had a feeling. Yeah. And I love this cast. Like, I 100% love this cast. I mean, even down to Tim McInerney is in this one. Yeah. As a British comedy guy, I'm a huge fan of Tim McInerney for a long, long, long time. And like, I love Michael Shannon. I love George McKay. And just this Lenny James is really great. There's just nothing great about this movie.
I think the point he's trying to make is great.
Yeah, I just his avenue of telling his point it does never feel this movie feels grating at all times to me. Like it is one of the hardest sits I've had in a long time.
This was my final movie at VIFF. And I think possibly my third movie of the day. And that was rough.
Because
9:30 start and it was and this is long. It's
yeah. Long. That's yeah. the equivalent of having a cigar put out on you at the end of the festival.
I also saw it in the 9:30 slot and I'd probably seen four previous and I lasted less than an hour.
And was it the fart scene, Bill? Was it the fart scene?
No, it was just it was just the movie. By the time I had left, I think more than half the theater had left. So it was the kiss of death of the festival. Like nobody wanted that film. Yeah, it's all kinds of awful. And you, sir, get a badge of honor for watching the rest of that film because I couldn't. Congratulations.
I guess so. Like I don't believe in worst of lists at all anymore. I think they're tacky and horrible. And like Variety and stuff can go fuck themselves on that kind of shit. But this might be like, and I've seen some real shit this year, but
yeah, I don't walk out of films at film festivals. Yeah. I walked out of the end.
I always remember hearing or reading an article about Roger Ebert walking out of the Mariana Palka film, Good Dick. And then like having like remorse about that and then going back and finishing it and then giving it a good review. But I don't see that happening for this movie. I don't think so.
It's too bad, too, because he's such an incredible documentarian.
He really is, because both Look of Silence and The Act of Killing got, like, visceral feelings out of me. Those are, like, some of my most uncomfortable moments with a movie that I think I've ever had with those films, to the point that those movies will make you feel ill. Like seriously ill.
Agreed.
Well, and I think, but that's where the through line is with the end, right? Like it's again about like, how do humans do terrible things and live with them? And they do it by essentially shoving it under the rug and refusing to think about it.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's what this movie is about at its heart. And it's just
the Bolshoi bullshit and the fucking, I just wanted it to be interesting. And none of the music is even earned. Like the music's weird and the songs are weird. I don't know. It's just, it wasn't my type of weird either. Like I was like, oh, maybe it's just quirky. It's just like a quirkiness that I need to get into, but I never did.
It needed more camp maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't even say I don't like musicals because I have two musicals on my list here and I like both of them. So,
yeah, I guess I don't hate musicals as much as I once said I do because there seems to be more and more that come through and kind of like change the rule. But, I don't know. I checked out All We Imagine as Light.
Good film.
And yeah, I really, really like this film because this is like, interest like a beautiful like beautifully shot like so gorgeous but like a parallel story about romance, connection, sex, and from like a culture and a place that I never would expect this kind of a story from.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really, really interesting, especially how the depth of how deep they're willing to tell this story. And I thought it was a really beautifully written story. And I have to say, this is probably one of the front runners for best foreign this year, I think.
Yeah.
And deservedly so. It's a really, really great film.
I really like the second half of it a lot more than the first. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's like story. It's just such a pretty, pretty movie, and like in a really kind of dirty and ugly place. But
yeah.
The beauty of the relationships just comes through too, but it actually is a really nice looking movie. I was surprised by it. I really, really enjoyed it as well.
Yeah. I watched Sonic the Hedgehog 3. I brought my youngest to the theater. Who
is Keanu awesome?
Keanu's great. You know what? I'm going to top it all here. I had fun with this movie. This movie's a lot of fun. Jim Carrey is fucking great. Lee Majub, that he gets some good emotional heavy lifting in this movie that I really appreciated from the local
did
boy.
Did you really just say emotional heavy lifting about a Sonic 3 movie?
I did because there is a love between the Agent Stone and Robotnik, right? There's like a friendship love there, and they did a good job with it. And I don't know. I was also maybe swayed by the fact that my little one is the like Sonic encyclopedia, like knows everything, knows every tiny little reference, and will point them out to me. But if this is how we're getting Jim Carrey movies right now, I'm all for it. He's great in it. He's relishing two roles in it, and there's some really funny double role jokes within the film. And it's, from what I can tell, completely true to the franchise. So Jeff Fowler's 3 for 3 right now. He's 3 for 3.
They've announced Sonic 4. So
Spring 2027. So
I don't want to diminish your like of this film, but if this film was shot in fucking VistaVision, I wouldn't watch it.
Not for you, Bill. They didn't make it for you.
Video game movies usually have that curse, right? Like have the horrible curse. But I think when it comes to the product of what it what they're trying to make, and or like what it's all based on, and what the movies are making, I think it's balancing out well.
Yeah, my nieces love them, so whatever.
They're not annoying kids movies. Like I enjoy them. And that's it, because The Brutalist is a long fucking movie.
I have nothing better to do with my life. Like I'm currently on quote unquote break. So all I've been doing is watching movies and baking bread. And baking bread is a very long process, so I watch a lot of movies. So let's talk about some of them, shall we? I'm not going to talk about all of them. I have a couple of key things that I really liked because I don't want to talk about movies I didn't like. The Order, Justin Kurzweil's new movie. This guy is amazing. I fucking love him. I will watch anything he makes. This is so good.
The Assassin's Creed guy?
Yes, it's the Assassin's Creed guy. But you've seen more than Assassin's Creed, right?
Yeah, I did Macbeth as well, right?
Yeah, Snowtown is amazing.
And so is the Nitram.
Oh, Nitram. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Nitram I like a lot. Caleb Landry Jones. That movie is fucking great.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's a really, really great filmmaker, but I think his strength lies in telling like really violent stories in a really interesting way that's not overly violent, though still kind of violent. So this is a take on a book called The Brotherhood, I think. I didn't write it down because I've read it and I thought I would remember. Don't remember. But I think it's called The Brotherhood. The Silent Brotherhood. Silent Brotherhood. So it's based on a true story of these white supremacists in the 70s and early 80s.
80s.
Yeah, working out of Washington State, who were basically robbing banks in order to fund their New World Order, I guess. So Jude Law stars as the lawman that comes into town. He's supposed to be taking a break, and now he finds himself in the middle of this giant investigation. And Nicholas Holt's having a really good year. Like a really, really, really good year. He's fantastic here. I like this movie a lot. Like it's just so well made. It is so quietly disturbing and really uberly violent in a really unexpected way. Both Dan and I really liked it a lot.
I was
where is it?
It's going to be on VOD tomorrow, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. Yeah. No Canadian distributor.
But it is a Canadian movie.
But yeah, I know exactly. I was actually surprised at how calm this film is, other than the bank robbing scenes. It's really calm and not very, it's, yeah.
It's very purposefully paced.
Yeah. Jude Law is really good.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, and Nicholas Holt's really good. And Ty Sheridan's really good, too. He's kind of underrated.
Always.
Yeah,
always.
Super good. I think Journey Smollett is killing it here, too.
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
But yeah, no, it's good. I wish more people would be able to see it on the big screen. I wish I could have saw it on the big screen. But yeah, I like this one, too, actually.
The order is thumbs up. Girl with the Needle. I had been warned. I actually went searching for this movie, even though I'd been warned it's really difficult to watch. It is so beautiful. That entire movie is like a bloody painting. It's just so, 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 so pretty. And so disturbing. So, like, there are so many scenes in this movie that are just, like, fucking heartbreaking. And it's not even, like, Dagma isn't even the worst. Like, that's the hard part. Like, you literally have a serial killer, and she's not even the worst part of the movie. It's intense. And the score is crazy. Like, this might be one of my favorite scores of the year. It's just so kind of out there. It's very good.
That might have been one of my favorite VIFF screenings this year, just to hear the noises people made during, like, the scenes of, like, weirdness.
It's because it's such a quiet movie.
It is.
It's like, so, like, Dan's like, is it finished? I'm like, no, it's only getting worse. Because there's not a lot of dialogue. There's not a lot of ambient sound. Like, it's a very quiet, carefully paced, very purposeful movie. But yeah, it's beautiful, 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 and just supremely disturbing.
Well, I apologize if it hurts you in any kind of way, because I think you watched it because I recommended it.
No, I don't regret seeing it. It was a very difficult watch, but it's very, very good.
I still haven't watched it yet, but I have to, because Chloe and I have to rectify the fact that we skipped it to see Joker Polya.
You made the wrong choice. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. So by the end of 2024, I have to have that vindicated.
I finally watched Flow, which is kind of sad to admit that it took me this long.
So good.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I cried like a baby. Yeah. Like, legit, yes. Cried like a baby.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, so did Chloe and I. I'm
like, oh my God. Well, like, it was a family watch on Saturday. My nieces came over. Actually, Melissa, we watched it because you had asked about it. Like, that's what I'm going to do with the kids. We're going to finally watch Flo. And oh my God. Yeah, we were all in tears.
That's the best idea. I watched it with my two nephews, 10 and 9. And at the beginning, they were like, is there no talking in this movie? Is there not going to be any talking? And I was like, no, there's no talking. It's just animals. Like, it's animals making animal noises. So they communicate in a different way. And they were like, I could tell they were like disappointed.
Skeptical. Yeah.
Kevin Hart. What are you doing to me? But they loved the movie. They loved it. And my mom decided she wanted to get a cat after seeing it. I'm in love with that cat. Now I have to get a cat. I think I need a cat just like that one.
That's amazing. That's
so beautiful. I want a capybara.
Yeah, me too.
Is there a better action scene this year than when the bird picks the cat up and... Yeah. It falls and like grabs the sail and just like lands perfectly. Oh my God. It's like so the greatest insane scene.
The animation in that film is just amazing.
Beautiful.
The movements of the cat are so realistic. Like, you would think it was just painted on top of an actual cat.
And the camera movement, like, one of the things that really worked the boat away was the way that he moved the camera within the story, because there is no dialogue, so like the camera is an active participant in the storytelling. Mm-hmm. And he's really, really like honed in on that even more with this one. And like he talked about how the goal when he started to make this film and he was testing like different approaches to how the story was going to unfold, one of the things that he wanted to have a lot of control over was like the camera and being able to move the camera within the story to get the angles that he wanted. Because I mean, I saw him talk about this at Annecy, not this year, like the year before, because he was like partway through production at that point. And I talked to him about it again this year. And so the reason I didn't watch it is because I wasn't able to get it for Spark, and then I was just bitter. I'd seen a bunch of behind the scenes. I'd had conversations with Gintz and the producers, and I'd seen like clips of it, but I had never seen the entire thing from beginning to end. And then I was like, fuck it, I'm not going to watch. Like, it was kind of this thing in my mind. And I'm like, and then when you mentioned it, I'm like, maybe the time is now. And I'm so glad I did. It's so beautiful. So beautiful.
Does it have an Oscar shot in hell, or is it Robot Dreams all over again?
No, I don't think it does.
So sad.
It's actually funny you say that, because I had a discussion with like two Oscar people that are like in the know, and one of them did say that it actually stands a chance because there's a lot more Europeans in the Academy now. And a lot of them have seen it. So I think you can vote for it if you've actually seen the film. You don't have to be necessarily to nominate it. You need to be within the branch. Right. So like only the animation people vote on the animation. But when it comes to like the actual Academy, if you've seen the film, you can vote for it. So there is a slight likelihood, but
yeah, the only one I'll accept is Wild Robot aside from Flow. Cause if it's Inside Out 2, like I enjoyed Inside Out 2, but like
they're not on the same
commercial
level.
How commercial?
Yeah. They're not on the same level. I finally caught up with Black Box Diaries, Shiori Ito's documentary, which is so heartbreaking. It was a lot of heartbreak the last 2 weeks. Like, there was so much depressing stuff before the holidays. This movie is... like
Oscar season. That's what happened. Yeah,
that's the winner. I think that might be the winner.
I mean, it
should be.
I mean, I don't see why it can't be. I mean, the fact, like, she's a hero. Like, there is no other way to describe, like, the fight that she put. 10 years of trying to get, like, some semblance of, you know, somebody just saying that, yes, this happened to me. Like, beyond just her yelling it out to everybody. It's so hard to watch at times. Mm-hmm. And when she has that conversation with the doorman at the hotel where it's just on her when she's on the phone with him and she just breaks down because he says, you know, I'll be there and I'll, you know, support you however I can. Like, just watching her face like fall apart, it's just, it breaks your heart. It's just so heartbreaking. Like, you hear these stories all the time. So I mean, you know that they're not uncommon, which is another tragedy, but like to just see it captured like that is just,
well, And then
fucking angry too.
The knowledge that there's like no like reform either. Like, like there's nothing is gonna fucking change.
No.
The society is the society is, the system is what it is, and there's no inkling that anything's gonna fucking change. So it's harsh. It's so harsh. That movie's brutal.
Battle. Yeah, it's highly recommended. It's a really, really
anybody know when that's gonna be available on like VOD or something? I haven't seen it, so I want to see it. And just for the record, my favorite doc of the year is Will and Harper.
I think really is good. Like up there for sure, but I as far as sheer importance, I think
Will and Harper is also pretty important, and the fact that it's
actually accessible, yeah, they're both there.
I think it's also like a great choice. Like, I wouldn't be upset if that was the winner too.
I also really liked The Remarkable Life of Evelyn. I don't know if anybody's seen that.
Oh yeah,
I haven't seen that one yet. I need to finish that.
It's good. Yeah. I really like that.
Mike Leigh's new film, Hard Truths. Bill, did you actually finish this?
I did. God, it pained me.
I actually kind of really. Is it not good? Like, I kind of really like this movie a lot. She is so crusty. I love her.
Hated her.
She is so. This is like the complete, like the 100% opposite to Happy Go Lucky. Like, she was all optimism and happiness and just, like, grating with her joy. This woman is the complete opposite, like, 180 degrees on the other side. Like, from the moment it starts, she's just like, bah, 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 like, to everyone. Like, everyone has got something that's grating at her. Marianne Jean-Baptiste is so good. She was in Secrets and Lies, too. She's fantastic. Like, I for whatever reason, I just loved seeing her take people down. I know someone, and it's, she's so mean. Like, she is so, 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 so mean. But then I was like, but, you know, sometimes I kind of wish I could say that to people, too. She is like everybody's inside voice on the outside all the time.
Just for the record, it almost made the film unwatchable for me.
I like the ending a lot. I think that the ending saves it for me. It's not for everybody, clearly.
Yeah, because she shuts the fuck up.
I'm looking forward to this one because I really like Mike Lee a lot.
So do I.
I'm such a fan of his work. So I've been hoping that I would open my email one of these days and see like an FYC screener for this one come in, and nothing's come in yet, or that because I think Mongrel has this one that they'll have a screener for it, but I've got nothing yet, so I'm just waiting patiently. This is one of the ones I'm looking forward to for sure, though.
Yeah, so Bill and I are not opposite. I
respect the performance because it works so well that it just completely made me not want to watch the film. Congratulations.
I think it's so well written and performed. I had so much fun with it. I really did enjoy it. Okay, can we talk about the Almodovar? Which is,
oh my God. Oh no.
It's
such a mess.
Oh no.
I know it hurts my soul to say that.
A mess in a fun way?
No,
it's just, the script is terrible. The acting is good, but the material is so bad. It doesn't even look like an Almodovar film. It's just so.
It looks like a soap opera.
A lot of his films are soap
opera. Soap operas, but this is not a soap opera. It just looks like one.
So it's not a colorful. It doesn't pop. There's nothing.
No.
There's a scene near the end with Alessandra Nivola and Julianne Moore, which is so good. It feels like it's from another movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's so much better than everything else. But neither her nor Tilda Swinton are any good here. Like, the movie is... And the thing is, I really like the concept. Like, the story is actually really interesting. So Tilda Swinton is... a war journalist who is suffering from cancer, and a friend of hers, Julianne Moore, is an author who happens to be in town doing a signing, and she meets a mutual friend of theirs who says, oh, did you know she's in the hospital? Oh no. So she goes to see her, and they rekindle this friendship that's been kind of waning for a while. And so the two of them kind of, like, you know, are back together, and it's like, it's interesting. Like, the story, the idea is really, really good, and I liked what it was going for. It's just such a hard watch. Like, none of it really works. Mm-hmm. Like, the concept is great, and even some of the dialogue is good, but it just, the whole thing just feels really flat and boring.
Yeah, what Marina said. Yeah. Times six.
Bummer.
Sorry,
bummer. I have a time screener coming to me in the beginning of the year. So
just wanted to say that I've had two of his films as my number one films of the year. And I am a absolutely huge fan. And this movie was maybe my most disappointing film of the year.
I've only had one press screening experience with Almodovar, and it was Julieta. And I fucking adored that. Maybe it was just the fact that I saw it in theaters, because I think it's the only Almodovar film I've seen in theaters.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, and then people like, yeah, it was like mid-tier Almodovar. I'm like, yeah, I guess so. But I don't know. It's the way it was presentation, maybe. Fucking loved it.
Yeah. All About My Mother is maybe in my top 10 of all time. Yeah, and
agreed. That movie's so brilliant.
Volvaire was also my number one film of that year. Yeah.
And we lost Marisa Paredes this this year. Which was a huge blow. But yeah, All About My Mother, I think, is just one of the greatest films.
It's a special film for sure.
So good. I loved The Skin I Live In.
Yes. Yes.
That's so good.
That was also like a great screening for me because I saw it at VIFF and like it was the opening gala film. And
yeah.
Nice.
It was intense. There were a lot of people in that audience that did not know what they had walked into, and yeah,
clearly if they walked out, geez.
Yeah.
And then
I thought it was fantastic.
So did I.
I was like, everybody needs a dad like him.
And then perhaps the biggest surprise for me is the Robbie Williams biopic Better Man, which is fucking fantastic, people. It is so fucking good. I can't begin to tell you how good this movie is.
Can I also say it's fucking fantastic?
See? Another biopic.
Was this a screening or was this a link?
No, so this is a screening. Okay. Well, I went to a screening. So
I saw a link.
Dan, I said to Dan, "Han, we have to go see this. This is the movie Weta was telling," because I had met with the Sarahs at Weta at, I don't know, some conference. And they were like, "We're really excited about this new movie." And that's the first time I'd heard of it. They're like, "It's the Robbie Williams biopic, but he's a monkey." And I'm like, "I'm sorry, come again." So, yeah, he's an alien. I'm like, I'm sorry, come again. She's like, "Yeah, we came on because they wanted to make something a little bit different. So Robbie Williams is an ape." I'm like, okay, and then literally like 2 days later, I saw the trailer because it dropped, and I was like, okay, that's interesting. Is this going to work? It is so good. Like, I can't believe how good this fucking movie is. Yeah. And like, we were watching it, and there's a sequence like splat in the middle of the movie that like to Rock DJ, which is just like mind blowing. I turned to Dan, and I'm like, holy fucking shit. Like, I know it's not one shot. It's made to look like one shot. But regardless, it's so impressive. Like, the rest of the movie, I'm like, how did they shoot that bloody thing? And then, of course, they did a Q&A with the director. And I'm like, oh, that's how they shot that thing. Guys, don't sleep on this movie. It's so good.
Yeah, I want to see it.
Dan isn't even a Robbie Williams fan.
I'm not even a huge Robbie Williams guy either. But
neither is Dan. And he's like, that movie was really good. I'm like, I know, right? It's so good.
Nice.
So I actually texted a friend after I watched it and told him I thought it was really great, and he thought I was lying.
He's like, stop being sarcastic. I can't read it through text.
I'm like, I usually am sarcastic, but actually I really like this film.
So great.
No, it's really good. Like, it's very well made. The choice to use, like, to tell the story the way that they have is really interesting, and it does add like another level. And what's his name? Michael Gracie explained their thought process for having him be like not a human. He started talking to Robbie Williams about doing a biopic right after The Greatest Showman. He said he was making trips to LA like every couple of months, and they started recording conversations in preparations for doing a film together. And he's like, it didn't seem appropriate to have somebody play Robbie Williams because he is operating on a level that is always showman. And so we wanted to elevate that even more to kind of blur the line between the showman and then the film. And it works if really, really effectively. But I mean, it only works because Weta are bloody masters when it comes to, you know, the facial capture. Because the emotion, if the emotion doesn't come through, the fucking thing doesn't work, right?
Yeah, if this doesn't win the Oscar, there's something really wrong.
The difficulty, like when you watch a movie like the Planet of the Apes ones, like everybody is like, it's a lot of digital, right? And it's a lot of digital characters interacting with each other. When you're trying to mix a digital character with like humans, it adds another layer of complexity that's like just mind blowing. And they were talking about doing like the simplest thing, like putting a hand on like his shoulder becomes like this giant issue. Like hugs, like they're constantly like, he's interacting with everybody in just normal human ways. And that is super complicated. Yeah, I'm with Bill. If this doesn't win the Oscar for VFX, the world. Everything is wrong with the world. I'm sorry.
just a couple things. Big shout out to Damon Harriman, who I think is a super underrated actor.
Rising star.
Yeah, I think he's awesome. Rising
star.
And the two geezers who played Liam and Noel Gallagher were pretty so goddamn funny. Awesome.
That's so funny. That's cool. You're fucking coming.
Yeah. So good. Yeah. But one of the most out of the blue, holy shit, where did that movie come from? Movies of the year for sure.
Agreed. See it, everybody.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it's better than that other biopic you're going to talk about. I know you disagree with me, but Melissa and I are on the same page. You are wrong on this one, sir.
Well, we'll get to that.
I'm done.
Okay. Who wants to go next?
Melissa, well, shoot.
It's down to me and you, Bill, and I think I have like four movies to talk about. So
okay, go for it, Melissa.
Okay, so I'll start with Janet Planet, which I finally got to. It came out much earlier this year, but I missed it the first time around, so it was nice to kind of catch up with it. The filmmaker came out of a theater background, and I think is one of the rare folks who've gone from theater to film who does actually understand how to use film as a medium, because this doesn't feel like a play on film, which is good. And I thought, this is kind of like a quiet observational film about a daughter and her mother and like sort of how she's taking on like how her mom interacts with other people. Like the story is told through chapters that are relationships that the mother has in her life. And she's clearly working some shit out and like trying to get past her need to be liked by everybody. And I just thought thematically, this is such a great movie for folks who were assigned female at birth and how we get socialized. Because it's often more about, sometimes relationships are more about wanting to be liked by the other person than really figuring out if they're the right person for us or whether we want to really be in relationship with them. So I just think this is kind of an interesting movie about something that maybe doesn't get a lot of airtime in a lot of films. And I love the awkward kid daughter. I thought she was fantastic
in this movie. Julianne Nicholson is so good.
Yes.
Yeah. I always love her.
Yeah. She's fantastic.
Yeah. The next movie I saw that I like, I love this. It's probably going to end up in my top 10 because I just really, really enjoyed this watch was Problemista. And again, a film that came out like earlier in the year, but I had kind of missed it and was catching up on it. I think Julio Torres is phenomenal. I think he's a genius. I think this is exactly the kind of surreal, socially aware, political commentary comedy that speaks to me entirely, like totally speaks to me.
And Tilda Swinton is so fucking good as this crazed, like,
yeah, she's the queen of Karens. Like, yes, absolutely the queen so of good. Karens. It's so great that like his character learns so much from her about how to actually stand up for himself. So like she's completely over the top, but all of us kind of need that voice in our head sometimes to like not put up with the bullshit.
Yeah.
And I just thought like this movie touches on so many great things about how like bureaucracy and policy can really grind us down. He's talking about the immigration system and the unfairness in immigration systems, the marginalization of the global South, like the craziness of banking systems and how banks continually screw over, especially the people that have the least amount of money.
I actually thought his commentary on the fact that he's trying to apply for this job at the toy company, whatever it is, and you like the only option is to enter US and mm-hmm. there's no other option if you're not. Yeah. And I thought that's like that level of like nuance feels so real. Like this is lived experience.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You can tell like all of this is definitely rooted somewhere. And those, I think, I don't know. I think that's the kind of story that is so great. Like, I think there's something to be said for Julio Torres speaking for his generation and speaking for his generation of immigrant youth who are, I think this was a really fun watch, but also really thought provoking and lots of great social commentary. And I just loved it. I loved Torres. I think he's brilliant. I don't know if that's like a facet of his personality or if he's really playing himself or if he's, you know, like a caricature of himself, but he's great either way. I'm not
generally a fan of surrealist comedies, but you rated this one so highly, I thought I'd give it a go, and I really enjoyed it. So that says a lot too.
Yeah, I think it's really well done, and yeah, and Tilda's so great. But yeah,
it's very fun.
Julio is my new hero. I can't wait to see what he does next.
His HBO shows are really good. Lots of Spookies, and there's a new one that put a season 2 out this year. Forget what it's called. He's great though.
I'm going to have to catch up with those now because now I'm like, yeah. I'm in love. I think he's fantastic.
I first saw him in Broad City. He's like a guest star on Broad City.
Okay, maybe that's where I have seen him before, I think, then.
Yeah, he's great.
I have seen him somewhere before, but I couldn't place it.
Oh, No. It's Shrill, A.D. Bryant's show.
Oh, okay.
He was on Shrill. That's where I saw him.
Okay. I watched Queer, which I think... I loved Queer. I really did. I feel like William Burroughs would love this movie so much. Like, I think Luca just kind of knocked it out of the park. It's been a really long time since I've read Queer. But this really just felt really close to the source material and to Burroughs himself as a person. This is the only thing resembling a biopic this year where I completely forgot that I was watching Daniel Craig and I felt like I was watching William Burroughs. There's just some really great scenes in this film where I really did feel like I'm not watching Daniel Craig anymore. He like completely disappeared into this character, which is not something I would say about any of the other kind of biopic performances. I think he's brilliant. I think this film will be tough for some people because it starts off as a narrative storytelling and then it moves into something quite impressionistic, which may not work for everyone. But I think like at its heart, like the fact that he's really captured in this movie, I mean, Luca does this kind of heartbreak in a way that no other filmmaker does, yep. I think. Because he finds the sort of the humanity in it and the beauty in it. But I mean, everyone has this experience of being in relationship with someone where it's not quite balanced, where maybe you're the one that cares more than the other person, or they're the one that cares more. And it's like there's a connection, but it's not equal. And there's something that's just so relatable and so painful and so awkward about that. And I don't know how, but Luca's sort of managed to also find the beauty and the humanity in that. And I thought this film was really fantastic. If you're even remotely a fan of William Burroughs, you have to see this movie because I felt like it really captured Bill Burroughs.
I think I'm in the, you nailed it. Like the first half I thought was fantastic. And then I totally did not buy into the second. I just couldn't get past it.
I had the exact opposite thoughts.
Oh, really?
I liked the second half and I didn't like the first half.
No, I really liked the first half, but I think that Melissa's right. Like the performance, like Daniel Craig hasn't been this good in a very long time. I mean, he's a fine Bond, but this is Daniel Craig acting.
Because I think Daniel Craig has been really great in a lot of things.
I agree.
Benoit Blanc.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. But he's very, very good here. Like, this is a different, to me, like, this is a different level of acting.
Yeah.
Like, he just feels like a different person.
This it really did feel to me like, and it's interesting because if you put a picture of William Burroughs side by side with Daniel Craig, like there's no particular physical resemblance, but there's something about his physicality in the film. There's something about the emotion that he's expressing that to me, it just really, really felt true to who William Burroughs is and how he expressed himself. And I just thought this was really fantastic.
Did I say that scene in the jungle where they regurgitate the whatever that was?
Their hearts.
I had to watch that twice because I'm like, the first time I'm like, did I miss something? Because that's where it takes a turn, right?
I mean, they are on ayahuasca. Like,
I know. Well, this was the thing. So I watched it. I'm like, but did I miss something? And so I rewound and I watched it again. And I'm like, wow, okay. I kind of know the level that they're playing on, and I don't think I'm kind of following anymore.
I feel like I was in a pissy mood when I watched this or something, because I was just completely had a different thought process. I thought the first half was okay, kind of boring.
It's uncomfortable because he feels so lecherous at the beginning, you know. Yeah. It's like it's hard to watch it. And then the fact that they have a connection despite the fact that he's kind of so
like, can I say the best part of the first half was a really cool use of a Nirvana song? That's about it for me. But then the second half, Leslie Manville shows up in the movie fucking rules.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, Leslie Manville was fantastic in this. I have to say, that was the musical choices for me were hard. Like, I love Nirvana. It's just that this is supposed to be a movie that's set in the 50s. And I just wasn't entirely sure why that was the choice. Trying to make this feel like a more timeless story. I don't know, but yeah, I'm not sure that as much as I love the music, I'm not sure it worked for me in this context.
Hey, Chris Novoselic needs a payday once in a while.
No, fuck that guy. He doesn't deserve money.
And I mean, for my quote unquote, I didn't like the second half, I still rated this a 4. let's be clear. This is still really fucking good.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm excited to watch it.
Very few directors are working on the level of Luca Guadagnino. And I rewatched Challengers, which still fucking amazing. Like, well, hands down.
What a year to put out these two films in the same year.
That's an intense back-to-back.
Yeah. And
talk about screwed up relationships too, right? Yeah. They're both movies about, you know, individuals trying to finding their way in the world with love, really, in two very different ways. Tashi Energy is still the greatest thing ever. That final scene is still amazing.
But those could be two career defining movies for any other filmmaker. Yeah.
We'll just do them back to back.
I think they're great. I think Daniel Craig was phenomenal in this film.
I will say, you know, I'm not a huge fan of remakes, but I'm looking forward to his remake.
Yeah, what's the next one again?
He's remaking American Psycho.
American Psycho, yeah.
Right, yes, with Austin Butler.
Austin Butler.
Listen, at this point, I Luca's vision is okay by me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I just don't understand. Like, I don't know. I feel like Mary Harron's is just really definitive. Like, I don't.
It is.
So is Dario Argento's Suspiria.
One of the greatest horror movies ever made.
But then I guess he did something different. But also there was more time lapse between those two.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I don't know.
That's true.
Well, and maybe we want to acknowledge that there's maybe he won't kind of follow the script in this the way that he didn't quite follow the script in Suspiria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Sorry, Melissa, any other?
No. I guess that's it. I did watch Baby Girl, but we're going to talk about that another time. So
yes,
yeah.
Mr. Bill, hit us with your list of impossibly long list of movies.
No, I'm going to cut it down a little bit. I watched the new David Gordon Green film Nutcrackers, which was the opening film of TIFF. It's not very good. Do you guys remember when David Gordon Green was like the future of indie filmmaking?
That was a millennia ago.
Yeah, he was like a dick about it too, though.
Yeah, like he made like George Washington and stuff like that. And they were all really great. This is kind of him trying to get back to it after making stoner films and shitty Halloween films.
We're going to glaze over the fact that he's a believer. So
yeah, this is Ben Stiller's. I haven't seen him in a while.
Mm-hmm.
He's back, I guess. his sister dies and she has a bunch of kids and he has to go and take care of them, and it's just a really boring film. I did not like it. Shout out to Linda Cordellini though, I really like her. She brings a little joy to the film. Yeah, it's not very good. It went straight to Hulu. That pretty much to say it all right there. As my new title as the King of Canadian Film, I'm going to say the full entire title of this one because I just have to. The Trailer Park Boys present Standing on the Shoulder of Kitties, the Bubbles and Shit Rockers story. Yes, Trailer Park Boys have put out another movie.
Out of nowhere. Where the fuck did this movie come from?
I don't know. It's not very good. do you remember when this show used to be like the biggest thing in Canadian television and then it just sort of died?
Yeah, up to season 4 and then the movie.
And then they made like 10 movies. Like, I will say this. I still kind of do like the characters, like Bubbles, and it's pretty funny. And in the movie, he's like a record producer. It's kind of funny. But the movie is not. It wears out its welcome very fast. And not my first Canadian film. I have another Canadian film to talk about too, because I am the king of Canadian film. God, we talked about a bunch of this stuff already. I'm taking the gloves off. I really, really, really liked A Complete Unknown. I don't care if I'm the only person who did. And the film's not about Bob Dylan. If the film's about him being like the linchpin of like a community, and the community around him is like more watchable than Bob Dylan in the film. I really liked all the characters. Like I really liked Pete Seeger, like Edward Norton. I thought he was great. I thought Monica Barbaro was really great. I thought Elle Fanning was really great. I thought Timothée Chalamet was good.
No, Timothy Chalamet's hair is good.
I guess, but I think it's, they're selling this as the Bob Dylan film, and I don't think it's the Bob Dylan film. I think it's like a movie about a scene and how Dylan changed it, but there was something already there and it was already happening. And the music is really great. And Boyd Holbrook.
Is the best.
Enough said.
Can we please get that movie?
So good. Yeah, I want a new Johnny Cash movie with Boyd Holbrook.
I'm there.
There's a scene where Johnny Cash tries to drive a car that quite possibly might be one of the great scenes of the year.
So good.
And if you don't think the music's going to be good, check it out on Spotify or Apple Music. It's pretty good.
Some of the greatest songs ever written.
I know.
Let's be clear.
Yeah. Dylan from that period until what, like Blonde on Blonde, Blood on the Tracks, was pretty much the greatest artist of his time. And a lot of those songs were in this film. After last episode where you both of you kind of trashed the film, I was expecting very little. And I was very pleasantly surprised.
I'm glad we could lower your expectations.
I was just going to say.
And once again, I'm going to throw up a little bit in my mouth. I like the biopic. Yeah. So I guess Steve will have to watch it and hopefully we'll be able to get to 2-2. But right now, I really liked it. I thought it was really, really great.
As of right now, I'm not getting it out here at Penticton. So unless I'm getting an FYC screening, because there is apparently a Searchlight for your consideration, like screener account. But
so my understanding is this opens in Toronto.
Victoria?
No, it opens in Toronto in January.
No, it opens in Victoria in 2 days.
Oh, so okay. So I'm thinking of Better Man, because that's the one that's opening in Toronto first, and then it opens in Vancouver like in the new year.
Yeah. I think Better Man gets the release January 10th, I think, is the full release for that one. I don't even know if we'll get it out here. Because the thing about the Better Man is like, I even heard from someone in theaters when a trailer played for it, and they're like, who the fuck is Robbie Williams?
That's a lot of people, apparently.
Yeah, so.
But they know that you know the music, guaranteed. Okay, and what else you got, Bill?
As I said, we talked about a lot of this already, but I'll close. I watched my second Canadian film of the episode. I watched a documentary on Blue Rodeo called Blue Rodeo Lost Together. Mm. I freaking love Blue Rodeo. I'm like the biggest metalhead. I love punk music. I think that Black Sabbath is the greatest band of all time, and I freaking love Blue Rodeo. I think Jim Cuddy might have the most angelic voice I've ever heard in my life. They're incredible live. The documentary is pretty basic, but shows that their rise and has lots of Much Music footage. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Love Much Music. It's a fine documentary. If you don't know who Blue Rodeo are, probably listen to them. They're really good. And if you can see them live, also see them live. And that, I think, is it. We've already talked about the rest of them, and I'm going to cut a bunch of them because I don't really want to talk about them. Oh, I also fell asleep during the Lord of the Rings animated film.
Oh.
It was not very good.
Yeah, it doesn't look very good. I'm waiting for the... I know the Warner Brothers, for your consideration, one's going to put it back on there eventually. So
yeah, I saw it in the theater. I was waiting
for that to happen.
I paid money to
see it. And so you paid money for an app. Swear, during Megalopolis, I was going to fall asleep. There was a few points in that movie that I was just like, "Rip!" Like it was, I was fighting it for sure. Yikes!
Yeah, but yeah, that's it for me.
Well, that wasn't so bad. No. We managed to get through a lot of movies in a relatively, you know, timely period of time.
There we go.
So what's coming? What are our options for the next show?
We've already talked about all these. December 25th, Baby Girl. We're talking about our next episode, so I'll be quiet. A Complete Unknown opens. It's really good, says Bill. He's right. the Fire Inside, which is not very good.
I have a screener for that.
Yeah.
So
it's a shitty biopic.
Meh.
I like saying that. Shitty biopic.
I love Rachel Morrison, though.
I want to see it for Rachel Morrison.
Yeah. And
Brian Tyree Henry is really good in it. It's just the movie's not very good at all.
It took me a minute to figure out what movie it was. I'm like, this, I know I've seen this.
The boxing movie.
Yeah.
Nosferatu opens. It's very good.
It's so good.
Yeah. Probably see it in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be my Christmas movie.
You can't see my face. My face.
Better Man opens limited, but it's wide in January. Definitely see that. It's awesome. This is why we're saving Baby Girl, because we've pretty much already talked about everything. And on January 3rd, the only thing that opens is Seven, a 20-year-old movie.
Listen, do you want to talk about Seven? Do you want to bring Seven?
I'm in. Listen, I've seen this movie so many times, I can probably quote entire sections of it.
Okay, so here's the thing. Supposedly, it might have different color timing. Fincher has talked about how the upcoming 4K might look a little different than what we're used to.
Okay, I have this movie in so many fucking versions at this point. I think I have three collector's editions. And I am thrilled that it's finally going to be available on 4K. So I'm definitely recording
this thing. Warner's sending me the 4K.
Along with Panic Room, finally.
Oh.
Yes. I have
to pick both of those up. Shit.
That would make a really good double bill, actually.
Yeah.
And the only other thing that opens is Wallace and Gromit, Vengeance Most Foul.
Which is very Netflix. Good.
It's is it on good. Netflix beginning in January or is it on Netflix?
January 3rd. No, okay, January 3rd, so Netflix.
Okay.
And plus, if we're real nasty, we could just talk about Squid Game Season 2.
This would mean Marina would have to finish watching Season 1
then
watch Season 2.
I don't think it was needed. This is another one of those El Camino things where they just kind of massage things into existence where we didn't fucking need.
No.
I liked El Camino.
I like The Agency. Can we talk about Michael Fassbender being on TV?
He's solid. I'm having fun with Skeleton Crew. It's it's so fun. And Jude Law belongs in Star Wars.
He's very good.
He feels
good.
Like he has like a quality, a certain element to him that makes him belong in that universe.
He also has a really sweet mustache in The Order. But has anybody watched Creature Commandos?
Yes, that was so fun.
So good.
And the latest episode was heart-shatteringly tragic. The Weasel backstory.
The Weasel episode? Yeah, so good.
Oh, tragic. Actually, even the G.I. Robot stuff was both Sean Gunn characters.
Do we get to kill some Nazis?
Oh, it's great. And I love that Alan Tudyk is still playing in this sandbox as Dr. Phosphorus. And because I thought he was going to be as soon as I saw his voice was in, I was like, oh, is Clayface in here? But no, it's a new character.
So next episode's going to be about 30 minutes long.
No, yeah. The next episode is going to be epic because we're going to talk about
baby. It's going to be all our catch up too.
I have nothing left to watch. Like,
I don't either.
Actually, left for me to watch.
Yes, so
I was telling you.
My list will hopefully be a little longer. Before we jumped onto this recording, I was actually watching my 4K of North by Northwest.
Oh, so good.
You can see why it's an AFI like forever staple.
Yeah, it's a very very good movie.
I went through my collection a couple days ago pulling out discs that I hadn't watched, and I watched two films that I totally just forgot and just remembered. Last episode we talked about Nickel Boys. And I thought about what movie have I ever seen that was like first person, and I thought about it, and I was going through my collection, and then I saw The Movie. Anybody remember that little Gaspar Noé film, Enter the Void?
Fuck that movie.
I still have flashbacks
to the first time I saw that. We still had our dog at the time before he passed away, and I clearly remember being in that front room and the camera shot through the toilet, and Denali's looking at the TV like he's mesmerized. I'm like, oh my God, I fucked up the dog.
Fucked up the dog.
Oh, dude.
He gets credit.
No way is so good. Like, has he made anything recently?
Climax.
Well, no, yeah, other than Climax.
Thing. No.
Because
that was now a few years
ago. That's been a few years now. Yeah.
Yeah. Enter the Void is
Steph's guess.
And I also watched a Criterion that I had still sealed on my shelf, John Sayles' movie, Lone Star.
Oh, Lone Star.
Yeah. Absolutely incredible Western. It's so good. And I remember I saw it theatrically and I bought it. I remembered how good it was, but that movie, it just slaps.
Mm-hmm.
My God. Sales.
Yeah.
So good.
It's funny. I got some sales stuff recently, from Allied, City of Hope.
Yeah.
And then there was something else recently that I got as well. And yeah.
But yeah, sorry to derail the podcast with my 4K Blu-ray watching.
Nothing wrong with physical media, man.
Yeah,
too much.
There is one more new release that I'm excited about. It's just been released on Mubi, and it's Alice Rohrwacher and J.R. An urban allegory, which I had never even heard of. Apparently it opened at Venice Film Festival. But JR's last foray into film was with Agnes Varda, the brilliant Faces Places.
Right.
And so it's quite exciting that he's now teamed up with another brilliant female filmmaker. And I'm curious to see what they're going to do with this.
And one that is so obviously influenced by Varda as well, especially La Chimera, which is like
not a good movie.
I loved no, but I loved that.
It didn't work with me either. It raised Josh O'Connor's profile for me more. Mm-hmm. More, yeah. It's part of Josh O'Connor's like rising up in my minds as a star. But no, it didn't work for me, but I could tell what she was going for with it a lot.
I love, I mean, Happy as Lazaro is really brilliant as well.
Yeah, that's good. I also gave Marina a link to a movie yesterday that I was hoping she would watch in time for this show, but she didn't watch it. So we'll get to talk about it next episode. And we've all seen it. We all really loved it. Okay. So,
Bird?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's also on Movie Tomorrow. Oh, movie. So.
Yeah.
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 Good stuff. Good stuff. Bryan Regalski.
Yeah.
The movie's been killing it, by the way. Like, Jesus. Like, the amount mm-hmm. of amazing things. Do not expect much from The End of the World is on there. I've added it to my watch list. I will.
Oh, you haven't seen that? That
movie's nuts. I have a link for that one, too. That movie yeah, I'm is looking forward to nuts. That.
The only reason it's on my watch list is because you talked it up. I'm like, this thing better be fucking good.
Yeah, because it's also 3 hours long as well.
Yes.
So. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So, also saw ready. That a bit. Also saw that a VIF at like 9:30 at night.
Holy fuck.
But that one you didn't movies, walk out of.
Long movies post 9 o'clock. I'm feeling over 40. I really am. Like, come on, ladies and gents. Let's
we're old. We need to go home.
Yeah. Let's put the hour 45 ones on at that time.
Dude, that was the mantra of VIF last year. Let's put every film at 3 hours long at 9:30.
Oh my god. It's like punching me in the eyelids.
Okay, now we're just rambling.
Never.
It is now after 9 o'clock, so we've all turned into pumpkins. Yeah.
Now this show's punching me in the eyelids.
Or the ears. The ears. Yeah,
exactly.
It's punching me in the ears. Our next show will be coming at you in the new year. So happy holidays, safe holidays to you. However you celebrate, hopefully you celebrate with movies. There's a lot of great stuff to watch in theaters and at home. Until then, where can folks find you? Bill is like ready to crash.
Oh, no, it's just, long day at work. I am Bill Harris. I am on Blue Sky at That Bill Harris. And I am not on Twitter. I killed it. It sucks. I'm also at Letterboxd at SoundJob69. Have a good holiday.
Miss Melissa.
You can find me on Letterboxd at Melzy. Happy holidays, everybody.
And you can find me on Instagram at TheMarina2 and on Blue Sky at TheMarina and on Letterboxd at TheMarina. And last but definitely not least, the man who is everywhere.
You can find me on Threads, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Blue Sky at The Steeple Dead. You can find my website, stevestebbing.ca. I do a show every week called What the Hell Should I Watch? It comes out every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. I'm also on Tremble, the horror podcast with Kurt and Taylor. You can look on Spotify for that one. And I'm also on The Night Shane Hewitt and The Night Shift on the iHeartRadio Network, Toronto's News Talk 1010. That is Fridays every week at 8 o'clock Eastern time. And there will be a podcast in next week's one, which is the fourth annual, something that Shane created, the Stebbies, which is my best movies of the year in different genres. So check that one out. And maybe watch The Substance with the whole family for Christmas Day.
Grandma is gonna love it.
She'll love it. It is a great allegory about aging.
And then she'll say, where can I get me some of that?
Yeah, she's like, where is The Substance? And where is that monotone guy's voice on the phone? Hello.
I think everybody should eat shrimp like Dennis Quaid.
Oh, just that's everybody's dinner table experience. If you have the big family around, is somebody's talking to you, just mowing food.
That scene is gravy, forever ingrained in my brain.
Hammering it. Oh, man. Oh, if you don't like Vince McMahon.
And you can find show notes and links to everything we talked about today on the website at atcpod.ca. Until the next one.
Hack the planet for the holidays.
Bye.